When you save on auto insurance for driving safe with USAA SafePilot, you'll feel like a big deal. Even in a traffic jam. Save up to 30% with USAA SafePilot. Restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another Boys in the Band podcast bonus episode. It's time for another My Naughties number one album. I'm Peter Smith and as ever, I've got Rich Gallagher with me. How are you doing, Rich?
Yeah, very great. Thank you very much for joining us, listeners. I hope you enjoyed the episode we brought to you on Saturday with Charles Cave from White Lies. Really good reception from that pod. Another one we really enjoy, Pete.
Yes, absolutely. And a running theme in the past two podcasts about the... These bands, White Lies and Jet in the previous week, performed shows where industry bigwigs were in attendance. And it seems that the enemy perhaps run out of phrases to describe this sort of occasion, because both Chris Sester and Charles Cave both use the same phrase, or reference the same phrase used in Enemy, that if a bomb had gone off that night that Jet were playing their big show in Melbourne, was it? And when White Lies were playing their big show in Hoxton Bar and Grill with lots of record companies looking to sign them up, if a bomb had gone off, the record industry would have collapsed, or the music industry would have collapsed, something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
The same phrase used. What do you reckon, Rich? Was it about 5-6 years apart, maybe a little bit more?
Oh, yeah, probably about that, wasn't it? Yeah, I think sort of 2002, 2003. I think it was for Jet, and yeah, we're talking about 2008, I think the first gig for White Lies, as the album came out in January 2009, didn't it? So yeah, about 5 years apart. Enemy obviously like to hype those bands up and use that consistent phrase, but yeah, I think it did just signify just how big both of those bands were, weren't they? And yeah, White Lies definitely really built that hype. I just remember it so vividly that they were the expectations were so high for this band. So yeah, really good to get the insight from Charles, and he also stuck around to give us his My Naughties number one album. So here's what he went with.
I have chosen the first, it's not technically the debut, but it's the first major album from a band called The Secret Machines, and the record's called Now Here Is Nowhere. This was one of those kind of great musical discoveries that came at, you know, that impressionable time when I was, I should have done my research before in terms of all the year it came out and things like that. But I'm not very nerdy when it comes to the kind of liner notes and who produced this and what, blah, blah, blah.
May 2004.
Charles. There you go, May 2004. So I reckon that the same year, basically, me and the rest of the band and some of our friends, we'd always, or pretty regularly, we'd go to Club NME at Coco on a Friday night. I think that was on a Friday night. And it was a great club night because they got really, really good bands playing. It was a big old venue. And I seem to remember that it was like, you know, it wasn't like paying, you didn't have to pay for like a full price gig ticket to get in. I think it was probably a fiver or something like that. So there was this, yeah, really great period of time where you could just go on a Friday evening and see like a really proper gig, you know, for a fiver, and then, and some support bands too. And then, you know, just stay and listen to sort of indie DJs. And one night we showed up with no real knowledge, I think, of anyone who was playing that night. I'd love to remember who the support was. I could probably Google it, but the Secret Machines were playing, and they were set up on stage in this sort of odd fashion, with the drummer, I think, far on the far right, kind of pointed with his drum kit pointed down the stage, sort of down towards the left of the stage. And then singer in the middle, I think, and they had the bass player, keyboard player on the other side. And it instantly kind of looked interesting when they came on. And I think they had a lot of kind of white lights, strobe lights and things like that. Pretty sure they were, maybe they were even wearing white, I forget. But it was just one of those gigs where they came on and within 30 seconds of starting to play, and I'm pretty sure they would have opened with the opening track from the album, which is a sort of 8-minute long opus. I'm pretty sure they opened with that, and we were just blown away. Like, you know, how have we never heard of this before? Like, because, you know, at that time we thought we were pretty kind of finger on the pulse with new music, but maybe not so much with American bands. I guess that was probably it. You know, there was such a scene, as we talked about on the podcast, within London, within the UK, that maybe at that time, apart from Kings of Leon and the Strokes, we were not so kind of in touch with some of the new American bands. I also remember at that Club Enemy gig, they were giving out something. I rarely saw this, but they were giving out like a mini CD. So do you remember them? They're like the size of a kind of like of a coffee coaster. And you just put this mini CD in your regular CD tray, but it just sits in the center, you know? So it's basically like the equivalent of a 7-inch CD. So you could fit, I guess, like 2-3 songs on there or whatever. But I'm pretty sure on this one, it was just that long 8-minute song that opens the album. First Wave Intact, it's called. So I grabbed one of them from, I guess, whoever was giving them out, and went home and you know, I think for a minute was like, am I going to break my little portable hi-fi if I put this thing in it? But fortunately it didn't.
Not to be confused with a mini disc, presumably.
Not to be confused with a mini disc, exactly, yeah. But yeah, honestly, it really was one of those like absolutely mind-blowing shows where it didn't matter that we didn't know any of the songs. We were all just, everyone that we were with was just completely transfixed. And I have to say, I'm pretty sure that's the only time I ever saw Secret Machines live, which is mad, really, because we became, all three of us in the band, so into that album. It's, you know, for anyone that hasn't heard it, it's really pretty unique. It has the kind of rhythm section of sort of Led Zeppelin in a way. It's very big, almost sort of stadium rock type beats, but absolutely not that kind of music. And on top with sort of, I guess, a sort of slightly Placebo-like vocal and very, I'm not going to say psychedelic because I think that's, people think of, you know, more like Tame Impala, and it's not like that. It's more just kind of spacey, kind of like spacey rock or something. But honestly, it's like, even today, putting that record on, it does kind of sit in its own world. It's very, very hard to find anything that's too similar to it. And the songwriting is just, it's just awesome. There's a lot of different kind of styles of song on there. There's that big long one that opens it. Then there's a kind of more of a sort of blues driven single, and then there's a couple of ballads as well, really, really nice. There's a song called, I think it's called You Are Chains, and it's just beautiful, like I guess almost a little bit sort of Radiohead-ish. And so we went wild for that record. And I have to say, Secret Machines, they released another record, I think called like 10,000 Raindrops, 10,000 Drops, something like that afterwards, which I personally never really got into. They released a record, I think, in lockdown last year, or maybe the year before, which was actually really, really good. But there is something about that debut which is kind of timeless for me. And White Lies, actually, the history I do know is that Secret Machines went on to form a new band called the School of Seven Bells, which had two female vocalists. And we had School of Seven Bells support White Lies on tour for a little time, I think just in the UK. Lovely people, great band as well. It was really great. And I do remember there being a time when we kind of, cornered them in a dressing room after a show, and were just like, you know, got to just be really, just want to be really open and say that, you know, that Secret Machines record was like a really, really big deal for us. And I think they were appreciative. Very sadly, as anyone who perhaps knows more about the band will know that, you know, one of the original members, I believe it's Ben, I think it was Ben, passed away. And there was a really, really touching article. I think it was on Noisy a few years ago, which was actually, it was more of an article on School of Seven Bells on the record that they were basically making when he got, you know, very, very seriously ill and was in hospital. And it was very, very sobering to read and hear about how encouraging he was of the record being, you know, continued and completed while he was unable basically to, you know, to really get involved in the studio. But I think he did everything he could for that record, you know, even while being ill and while being in and out of hospital. And then I think, you know, in hospital permanently. So whilst of course, had that not happened, the record would still be immensely important, I think, for that era of music and as a debut record anyway. But I think with that added tragedy, you know, there is a real weight to it because it sounds like a record that young, passionate, enthusiastic musicians made. And when, you know, they had nothing to lose and would having probably a lot of fun doing it, I think, as well. It sounds like it was a whole lot of fun to record. And I think for me, it does just make you think, not to get too over the top, but, you know, life is short. And I sort of listened to that and I can't help thinking about, you know, what came after and the journey that those individuals went on, that followed, and, you know, the very sad passing of one of those original members. So all I'd say is I think anyone that hasn't heard it and is, you know, is into any kind, pretty much if you're into any kind of rock or alternative or indie music, you absolutely need to at very least give it a go, but certainly have it and consider having it in your collection, because it really is a classic.
Yeah, fantastic album. Yeah, great tribute to it as well, Charles. And well, we said the album came out in May 2004. I suspect it was, well, I think it was later that summer I saw them at Reading as well. And
right.
A bit like you, I think I might have been onto the album already by that point and looking for them, but they were playing sort of one of the smaller tents. And I think, yeah, that stage setup was impactful because it was like, you know, no other band before or since that I've seen have that drum kit so prominent on the stage. And,
yeah,
you know, they made a big stage look very tight and small by having, yeah, you know, the guitarist and the keyboard player really tight close to them. And, yeah, seeing them live was an experience. And, you know, I don't know if it's the music or the way they delivered it or that setup of the stage. It's just it all came together and it was a powerful experience to see them. And, yeah, Nowhere Again was the song that I really liked off that album.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's one of those you just, you know, you look back and you think, well, why didn't more happen for this band? But great tribute.
It's just the way, isn't it? You know, and that's why we do these things. That's why we come and we have these, you know, podcasts where people come on and talk about the records. And like you said before we started, you know, recording, it's all very well coming on and talking about, you know, the debut Strokes record or the first Kings of Leon record, and not taking anything away from them. They're great albums, you know, Interpol 2, and they caught in a way that propelled. But that's not to say that there weren't some, you know, really serious records coming out around the same time that for whatever reason just didn't have, you know, the same kind of follow through. And that's not on the band. That could be on anything. It can be on, you know, I hate to sound cynical, it can be on the label, it can be on the management, you just don't know, or personal circumstances, things like that. Like, you know, I know for a fact that for example, White Lies, weirdly we do so well in like almost all of Europe, but the one country where we don't do so well, surprisingly, is France. And it was really, really early on. We were scheduled to do this, I guess, kind of the equivalent of Jules Holland in France. And the night before, Harry got like proper norovirus. Like, we're talking the really serious norovirus vibes, and was up all night. And, you know, he texted at like 6 a.m. and was just like, I just don't think I can get on the Eurostar and do this thing. Like, I'm exploding, basically. And apparently, you know, we told our French record label, like, this is the situation. And the vibe was pretty much like, you know, if you don't show up and do this, that's kind of like, it's kind of it. Like, it's going to be really tough to kind of make any waves in France. And we were like, what do you mean? Like, this, you know, our singer is like morbidly ill. What can you do? But it's just weird how these little things happen, and it changes the trajectory of where you're going at that time. And so, you know, who knows? Secret Machines put out an amazing, amazing album, and we would all have liked, or the fans of that record, I'm sure, would have liked them to go on to become a sort of, you know, the sort of arena bands that some of the other indie acts at the time did. But hey, it didn't. But they've done a lot of great things since. And yeah, the most recent one is very much worth listening to too. It's really, really, really strong.
Better talk to you about Club NME just while we've got you as well, because I was a regular there as well, Coco. Yeah. And I don't know about you, but me and my mates, we had the tactic of pretty much as soon as you get in, get up the stairs up to the top bar as quickly as you could, because it's about four or five floors in the end, isn't it, Coco? And
yeah,
you get up to the top, there's no queues at the top bar, so you can grab a booth, grab a pint, and then settle in until the band start playing.
Yeah, definitely. It was a really good night. It was like, I feel it was kind of one of those nights where you could actually get there at like, you know, like 8 o'clock, and it didn't feel early. There was like stuff, there were bands playing and you could stay for the whole thing. Like, whereas some of the other kind of club nights at the time, you'd probably rock up like later, you know? And so I've really good memories of Club NME. And because it was so big as well, like, it was, you know, you always had a little bit of space. You could find yourself a little area to sit down with someone for a minute. It wasn't, you know, super squashed the whole time. And the sound system was really good. I mean, obviously that's kind of dependent on the band and stuff too, but I that's another thing I remember about that Secret Machines show, is it's like, it just sounded incredible. It sounded like we were there to see, you know, a sort of a band that had been playing for a decade and already had, you know, tons of fans. It was so confident in every way. So yeah, very cool.
Good times.
Yeah. So yeah, a big fan of that Secret Machines debut as well. So yeah, really pleased that you've chosen that one. And yeah, great to reminisce about Club NME. Many a happy Friday night spent there.
I know. God, it feels a long time ago.
Yeah. And a tough Saturday morning afterwards.
Always. Yeah, those like electric green aftershock shots. That was, God, no more.
Yeah, couldn't get away with that now, I don't think. I don't think I'll be able to survive a night like that now.
No, me neither.
Nice one, Charles. Nice one. Thanks very much for coming on.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. Yeah, pleasure. Take care. Have a good evening.
So there we go. Charles went with Secret Machines. Now Here Is Nowhere, the album from 2004. Really good choice, a band and album that both myself and Pete were definitely into back in the day. It was interesting hearing Charles talk about how much it meant to him and the rest of White Lies, and how, despite, you know, its brilliance and how great they were, never really necessarily caught on maybe as much as you might have expected down the years. I remember, again, similar to White Lies, there was a bit of hype around this band. I remember Noel Gallagher tipping them and adding them to an Oasis tour as a support. That I remember seeing them on that. That was my experience of seeing Secret Machines live at a support in Oasis. And I think David Bowie was also a big fan, wasn't he? He even interviewed the band, that I read when researching the album. So, yeah, they certainly had a lot of celebrity admirers. And it was just a bit unusual that they didn't necessarily break the mainstream in the way that they might have been expected to. But still, brilliant band, brilliant album. And as Charles said, they came back with another new record just last year during lockdown. So go check that out. If you didn't know that had come out, or if you'd not checked out Secret Machines before, they're definitely well worth a listen.
Yeah, definitely highly recommend. And of course, highly recommend subscribing to this podcast, because we've got another good podcast coming out for you this Saturday. A band who were definitely in the mainstream for a short period of time in the early 2000s. And I think this is going to be an interesting one, Rich, for us, because a band probably who split opinion a little bit, but a band who undeniably certainly had their moment. So looking forward to getting to these guys. I can clearly remember receiving the album. And I think it was, well, we're coming up to the anniversary of it. I think it's this month month is the 20-year anniversary of this album, which was certainly very highly acclaimed at the time. So it will be an interesting one to get into. Looking forward to speaking to these guys. We're catching up with them ahead of Saturday and releasing the podcast in the early hours of Saturday. So make sure, as I said, you're subscribed, signed up, and looking forward to that one. And we'll catch you at the weekend for that next episode of the Boys in the Band podcast.